Welcome to Next Us 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. The inaugural season of Next Us 818 Podcast features descendants of the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion. The 6888 was a unique U.S. Army unit which had the distinction of being the only all African American, all female battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. I am pleased to welcome to Episode 3 a descendant of Elizabeth Barker Johnson, who served in the 6888.
My guest tonight is Cynthia Scott, the daughter of Elizabeth Barker Johnson. Welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Well, thank you for joining me. I'd like to start with a few interesting facts that you shared with me. First, okay. Your mom was awarded her bachelor's degree at Winston-Salem State University at age 99. Wow. And second, your daughter entered the military because of your mom's influence. So tell us about your mom, Elizabeth Barker Johnson. She was from North Carolina, graduated from high school in 1943?
In 1942. But yes, she grew up in a small town in Elkin, North Carolina, born in 1920. But she grew up there and actually went to high school. She just went to elementary school through the seventh grade in Elkin, because there was not a high school there for African-American children. So her mom and dad had to send she and her sister to another town called Winston-Salem, North Carolina, which is about an hour from Elkin. And they attended high school there. It was Atkins High School. So they both attended Atkins High School there. And actually, mom waited. Her sister was 2 years younger than she was. So my mom waited until her sister was ready to graduate. And they actually graduated together in 1942. So she was 22 years old when she finally graduated from high school.
So why did she decide to wait? What was that delay?
Well, she to graduate with her sister, there was really nothing for her to do. And I guess she just decided that she wanted to wait and come out of school at the same time that her sister did. So she just waited. I guess she continued to take classes. That's one thing I don't really know. I didn't really ask her. I just knew they graduated together. But she just waited to come out at the same time that her sister did.
Okay. So I understand that she kept her enlistment plan hidden from her parents.
She did. From my understanding, though, she was still living once she and her sister graduated from high school. Instead of them moving back to Elkin, they stayed in Winston-Salem with the family that was housing them during that time. So she and her sister both were cleaning houses at that time. And just knowing my mother, I know she knew that there was something better out there to do than to clean houses. So one day she said she came home from, I guess she was coming home from work. She stopped at the mailbox. She took the mail out, went inside, and there was a flyer in there, the old flyer that you would see that had the picture of Uncle Sam on it and the finger of Uncle Sam pointing, saying,
Uncle Sam wants you.
Yes. So she said she looked at it, she laid it down, laid it to the side, looked at the rest of the mail. So once she'd finished looking at the rest of the mail, she picked the flyer back up again and she read it again. Uncle Sam wants you. And she said to her, she said, well, maybe you just might have me. So I'm not really sure how long it was after that. She decided to go and fill out all the necessary paperwork, do whatever needed to be done to enlist in the Army. And it wasn't until after she was accepted that she told her mother and her father that she had enlisted and, you know, was accepted into the Army. Now, my mother had a brother that was also in the Army during that time as well. And I'm not sure. As a matter of fact, I talked to my cousin last night. His it was his dad. And I asked him where he served, if he was overseas. And he said he thought that he was actually in England and France as well. But I never asked Mom where he actually was. But he was in the Army as well. And so I guess she kept it from him because she probably thought, well, we've got a son that's in the Army. Now we've got a daughter that's joining the Army. So she did not tell them until after she was accepted. And I asked her at one point, and I said, well, how did they feel, you know, when you told them that you know, you had signed up and that you were accepted? And she said, well, they just, you know, said, well, just be careful. We want you to be careful. And that was about it. I guess they knew that she had already made up her mind to do it. And there was no talking her out of it.
So they knew she was was strong-willed.
Very, 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 very strong-willed. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
So it was very courageous for a young Black woman to enlist in the Army during that period of time in the 40s. What do you think made her special?
Well, I think because my mother's always been one that wants to help people. She wanted to, whatever she could do to help people, that's what she wanted to do. And I think that she knew that she could go in there and make a difference, whether how big, how little, whatever it was, she could make a difference. And I also think it was because it was just a selfless act that she, along, I think, with the other ladies that enlisted, it was just a selfless act that they did because they didn't do it for the fame or fortune, as we know. They didn't do it for the fame or fortune. And I think that she just went in there and because she wanted to help out, she wanted to do what she could do to help out. That's why she did it. And I mean, I think it takes a special person just to sit back and say, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to do this. You know, I think I want to, you know, to do something that, you know, that feels like that she's really doing something for her country.
So what does she do when she returned from service?
Once she returned, she, which was in 43, she enlisted in, or no, excuse me, she signed up to go to school. At that time, again, this was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. It was called Winston-Salem State Teachers College. Today it's Winston-Salem State University. And she always wanted to be a teacher. So she signed up for classes at Winston-Salem Teachers College in 1943 and graduated in 1949 with her degree in education.
But she was not able to march at that point.
No, ma'am. She was not able to march at that point. Once she had finished her classes, she already had her first teaching job in Spencer, Virginia. And when the graduation ceremony was to be held, she asked her principal at that time, you know, can I go back and march with my class, you know, to receive my diploma? And they would not let her do that. They said, nope, she had to stay there and teach. So she was unable to march with her class, when they had the ceremony at that time. So she had to miss that.
So what is the 70 some years later, how did it come to pass that she participated in the 2019 graduation ceremony?
Yes, ma'am, 2019. Well, Edna Cummings, as you know, she has some ties with Winston-Salem State University. And she got in touch with a lady there and told her about my mother. So, and Edna called me and told me that she was going to give my name to the lady there at the university and that they wanted to come and speak with Mom. So I said, okay, you know, that's fine. So it was in March of 2019, they came to visit Mom when she was still living at the independent living facility where she was staying. So they came to visit her and they just started talking and was, you know, talking about her graduation. I mean, about just her going to school there. And she happened to mention that she did not get to walk across the stage to graduate. And so, you know, they talked about it, did not say anything, and they left and, you know, went back to the school. And I guess it was about 2 or 3 days later, I received a call from another lady there at the school. And she said, oh, Cynthia, she said, we've got something that we're wanting to do for your mother. I'm so excited. I can't tell you right now, but I think it's just going to be wonderful. She said, but you're going to hear more about it. So she kind of left me hanging. I was just like, okay. So she kind of left me hanging. I was kind of curious as to what it was. Well, then a few days later, I received another phone call that said, well, it's 70 years, 1949, and here it is 2019. It's 70 years later. And we want your mother to finally march across the stage to receive her degree in hand, instead of it being mailed to her like it was, that they wanted her to receive her degree in hand. And so they asked me if I thought, well, you think, you know, do you think your mom would do that? And I said, well, sure. So that's when everything started rolling. So on her birthday, May 2nd, her 99th birthday, we always try to do a big party for her. So at the retirement or at the independent living facility where she was, we had a big party for her. But in the meantime, I knew that they were going to give her her cap and gown. So it was mailed to me and I wrapped it up in a graduation paper and everything. And so I sent that to her. I mean, so I got it all wrapped up. And so two of the faculty members from the college came to her birthday party. And they presented to my mother the gift and said, you know, we want you to march across the stage to receive your diploma at this year's graduation. Now, her birthday was May the 2nd, graduation was May the 10th. So just a few days after that. So after, I don't think she really kind of grasped what was going to happen until we started talking about it. And she looked at me and she said, I can't walk across that stage. I said, oh, yes, you can. Yes, you can. There'll be plenty of people there to help you. So we did. We went to that Saturday, that Friday night, we went to Winston and the news media was there. I mean, NBC, CBS, local news channels. It was just like a press conference, you know. And so they spoke with her. And the next day we made it to the graduation, more interviews. And of course, my mother's was a very humble person. You know, she would ask you, why are you all doing this for me? You know, it's just, you know, why? And I said, well, you know, mom, you deserve this. So anyway, she went with, they had the ceremony. And so she sat up on stage. And so after the guest speaker spoke, then they brought her, they announced, they read her bio. She stood up. And with her walker, with the aid of her walker, she walked just a few feet to the chancellor and he handed her her degree. And it, of course, it was some of the photos that were taken that day were seen around the world and the videos were seen around the world. So just, you know, when you see them, they would make you cry because I think
I did. I've seen the video clips. Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful, but that's how it all came to happen. Just a conversation led for her saying that she never got to walk across the stage to get her degree, and that's how it all started.
I'm sure that you couldn't have given her a more special 99th birthday present.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful.
Well, you've mentioned Edna Cummings, so since our audience probably is not familiar with her, it's retired Colonel U.S. Army Edna Cummings.
Yes.
She's been an advocate for the 6888, and she's a producer for the 6888 documentary, one of the exactly. producers. So I just mm-hmm. thought I'd let our yes. audience know that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as you think back, are there any stories that your mom shared with you about her time in the service? Any funny stories, scary stories, memories? And I know, you know, my mom, I've been going through some of the things my mother left and lots of black and white photos and just going through the photos and she told us some of the stories. So I'm just curious as to whether or not your mom told you any stories or things was she afraid of anything? Any adventure stories from being in Europe?
She
the camaraderie of being with that many women on a ship or under those kind of conditions that they dealt with over there.
she and the unfortunate thing, I guess, is with me, a lot of her stories I was just hearing for the first time, I guess starting back in 2017, right before the monument dedication
in Kansas
in 2019, when retired Commander Carlton Philpott reached out to me. But she did tell me one story in particular. I know she, it always brought a smile to her face when she told this story. One time they were, let me back up a little bit. My mother did not actually work with the mail until they went to Rouen, France. Okay. When they were in Birmingham, England, my mother drove a truck. This when she was in the United States, she drove a truck. So when she went to England, she drove and maintained the truck in Birmingham. So when they were in Rouen, and they were, she was on her shift working, and they were, of course, you know, the packages had been sitting there for months, years, whatever. Some of them had fallen apart, rotted, you know, the boxes were rotted because there were food and whatnot in them. But anyway, the particular day she was working, she picked up some boxes or mail. She said a watch fell out and it fell on the floor, and she picked it up. And she thought, oh my goodness, you know, she thought, how am I going to find out who this, which one of these letters this watch came out of? Because, you know, she looked at it thinking, okay, this is somebody's family member has sent this watch to them, you know, whether it was a, you know, that time, you know, of course they didn't know whether it was like an old family heirloom, that like their grandfather's watch or whatever that they were sending to them. But anyway, she's thinking, you know, how in the world are we going to figure out who this watch belongs to? And she said, she just stood there and looked at it. And she happened to turn it over, and on the back of the watch was the serviceman's, ID right. number was engraved on the back of the watch. And she thought, we've got that. We're going to be able to find, we're going to get this watch to this person who, you know. And she was so happy. She said she was so happy that day that she was able to make sure that watch got to that particular soldier, something special that their family member, you know, had sent to them. So she was excited about that. Another story my daughters and I kind of laugh about it because we just know how my mother is. When she was stationed in at Camp Campbell, Kentucky, my mother had a small injury. Her heel, somebody shut, she was climbing up either into the truck or out of the truck that she was driving, and somebody walked by and closed the door, and it closed on her heel, which she had to end up going and having a little bit of minor surgery or whatever done to that. So they put her in the office to work during that time until she healed. And she said, when they had just started the 6888, her job was in the office with, along with other paperwork, they would send a list of the soldiers that were next in line or that had been chosen to join the 6888 to go overseas. And she said, some of the ladies would come into the office. They knew when, whatever date it was or day it was that the new listings would come out. They would come into the office and say, is my name on there? And Mama said, she would look at him. She said, you'll just have to wait until I post it. I'm not telling you. And I can hear my mother saying that right now with that firm voice that she can have. So she told that, and she told us that the very last list that came in for her to post,
and her name,
she said, when she looked at it, her name was on there. She said she had no idea that she would be going overseas, but she said her name was on there. And that's when she found out that she would be going overseas. So we kind of laugh about that because we just know how she was and that tone of voice that she could have when she spoke to people sometimes.
It's always nice to be able to reflect back on those stories, particularly once they're gone. Do you recall any lessons that she learned through her service that she passed on to the family? Any values or traditions?
I think the biggest thing that she passed on to us I think was her work ethics and how she treated people. Again, she's always one that was always willing to help in any way she could, and she's passed that along definitely to our family. And you know, then her work ethic, she is one that, you know, she wanted to get right in there. She wanted to do it no matter what it was, whatever she could do to help. She was just right there, you know, willing to do it. She just enjoyed helping other people and seeing other people succeed. And she's definitely passed that along to us, and her stubbornness, I get that from her definitely. So she passed that along, whether I knew she was, you know, even in the later years, finding out that, you know, her story in the military, she definitely, that is one thing I could definitely tell you years ago that she passed along to me, because she was just a very headstrong, stubborn person. And I think sometimes we butted heads because we were both the same.
Probably needed that to survive in a group with 855 women.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So let's segue, Cynthia, and talk a little bit about you. So you're in that happy place on the countdown to retirement at the end of the month.
Yes, ma'am.
Congratulations. Yes, ma'am. I know you've been looking forward to that. So
yes.
So tell us a little bit about your background, your career.
My most of my career has been, of course, working. After graduating from high school, I just went 2 years to college. And at that time, the up and coming thing was computer programming. And I learned how to write programs for computers. And that was when you had the card punch. You had to hand key everything. So I was always excited when I got a program to work. But and I had planned on going on to school, further my education. But at the time, after about 2 weeks before I graduated, my advisor at school came to me and said, there is a job opening in your hometown, because I had to drive about 30 minutes to go to school, which isn't far, at the utility company there. And I looked at him and I said, I don't want to work there. And he looked at me and he said, go apply for the job. Well, needless to say, 43 years later, I'm finally leaving that company. But that, like I said, I had planned on going further to school and just never did, and have even thought about going now that I'm getting ready to retire. I've got the time to do it. I've even thought about and even mentioned possibly going to Winston-Salem State University.
Mom's footsteps.
Following in her footsteps. And I thought, you know, how neat it would be, you know, to graduate and then also to be able to wear her cap and gown that they gave her. I am thinking about it, doing that, but that's been mainly my career. I've got, of course, two children. As you sort of mentioned earlier, my younger daughter joined the Navy. Okay. And back in 2010, and she had been thinking about it for a while. Again, she had been thinking about it and didn't really say anything to me about it or her dad about it. And she just decided she wanted to join the Navy. And I kept thinking, when she finally told me, I thought, nah, she's not going to do it. Well, she signed up for it and went off, and she was in about 3 years in the Navy. But she said that her grandmother, she said, my grandmother was the one, she said, she is the reason I went into the military, because she wanted to follow into her footsteps a little bit.
Okay. Very good. So I understand in your spare time, you are a burn boot camp and Tai Chi Chinese martial arts guru.
Yes. Burn boot camp. Actually, and my older daughter taught me into doing this. And after I started doing it, I kept thinking, why did I listen to her? But burn boot camp is an exercise. I mean, it's, when I say it's a boot camp, they tell you what to do and they're standing over you telling, you know, there's certain, each day is a different day. You may have arm day one day, leg day the next day, total body the next day, speed and agility, whatever. So when you go to class, you've got an instructor or trainer there that's telling you, okay, you need to do this. And if they see you trying to slack off, you know, they'll call your name out and they'll say, okay, let's do this. And I keep reminding them, I said, look, I'm the oldest one in class. I'm the oldest one here. And probably about one of the oldest ones there. I think myself and another lady are the oldest ones there. But I do what I can do, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. My health is better because of it. And then I just recently started doing the Tai Chi. I had heard of it, and they were offering classes at the library. And a friend of mine said, just come and join me and just see how you like it. So I, in my mind, I call it slow-mo karate because it's very slow. But of course, the motions or the moves that you make are self-defense moves. And I thought, you know, anybody can, you know, anybody really in this, given this world situation today, anything you can do to protect yourself, you know, you're a step ahead. So yeah, I started doing that. So I've been doing that for about 3 weeks and thoroughly enjoy doing that too. So I'm a very active person, just like my mother, very active person, like to stay active, like to stay moving. So I'm
maybe you get 100 years out of this run also.
I hope so. Hope and pray that my mind is good. You know, I can get nobody. So nobody's going to have to, you know, be around me 24/7. I really hope so. That would be a blessing if that would work. It would be a blessing.
Yeah. Getting to that centennial mark definitely is a blessing.
Amen.
I want to talk a little bit about influence. I'm wondering how you think your mom's experiences in the 6888 influence and help shape your life and your decisions.
Again, just because the lateness in the time that I knew early on in life that, you know, like I said, she was in the 6888, but not really getting into a lot of what she did or anything like that. But I have to go back to say, as far as her influences, you know, on my life, would be still just, you know, I guess my work ethics, just doing for other people when somebody needs something, you know, try to be there for that person, like, you know, like my mother was. And, you know, that's just the kind of person that she was. And I think I get a lot of that from her. So, and just being kind to people, listening to people when they have something going on. My mother was a very good listener. You know, a lot of times she would just let you talk and you would kind of figure it out on your own. You know, she would let you figure out on your own what it was that if you had an issue or problem, you know, what it was that you needed to do. But I guess as far as those influences, you know, that would be, you know, what I've, you know, gotten from her.
What do you think about your mother's decision to serve a country, given how racist the country was at the time? Do you have any thoughts about her decision to serve?
You know what? I don't think she really even thought about that. I don't think so. I think my mother was thinking, you know, they need help. And, you know, she felt like that if there was something that she could step in and do, something that one of the male soldiers was doing during that time, if it was something that she could step in and do to help so that they could go on to fight or do something else, you know, of course, something that she couldn't do, you know, something more, you know, like the fighting or, you know, whatever, that if she could step in and do that, that's what she wanted to do. And again, while she was in the United States, she always told me she drove a 3/4 ton truck. I was looking at her paperwork the other night when she was released from the army, and on there it said a 2.5 ton truck. So that was bigger than what she told me. So that was something, of course, that a man was doing before the women came in there. So she could do that, and she helped to maintain that vehicle. She drove personnel, you know, to and from on the base where they needed to go. She delivered supplies, you know, and did things like that. So that she was doing something. Again, she don't think she thought about the racism or anything like that. She just thought, what can I do to help out that could help some, you know, that could help somebody else? Okay. I think that's what was on her mind.
So as you're learning more and more about the 6888, because, you know, we have an expanded network of descendants that we're getting to know. Mm-hmm. What do you see as the legacy of the 6888? What do you think is the legacy?
A group of strong will ladies that came from all backgrounds when they came in. The legacy of this group of women, just their want to, their sacrifice to help other people selfishly, I can't even get it out.
Selflessly, yeah, I think.
Yes. And never boasted about it. I mean, none of the ones that I had met early on never boasted about it. They were just very, I think all the ones I met were very, all the ladies I met were very humble ladies.
How many did you get to meet?
The first set that when we were at Leavenworth, besides my mother, there was four other ladies. Okay. And then, well, actually, I guess those were, because it was five total, including my mother. And so I guess the newer ones, I guess that would be the five, because the newer ones, I had not met them. I had, you know, just heard when they found new ones that were coming in, you know, I started reading about them and hearing about them. So,
for the audience, we mean new ones that are still alive.
Yes, ma'am. The ones that were still alive. Yes, ma'am. Right. That's what I start talking about it, because I know in my mind what I'm thinking, but to relay it to the audience. Yes. Mm-hmm. But yes, it was. But those were, like I said, in speaking with those ladies, you know, I enjoyed talking to them and hearing their stories. And learning, but I just a very humble group of ladies, just a very humble group of ladies.
Yeah. So, yes, I've only met two, other than my mother, of course, one of her closest friends who served with her, became a, mm-hmm. Someone who served with her, became a lifelong friend. So. Mm-hmm. And I have one final question for you. So what lessons from your mom's life story can you share to inspire young African-Americans to embrace fear as opportunity in order to shatter glass ceilings and try to be their best selves?
I think what my mother would probably say to somebody is to know that when you set out to do something, that it may not go as planned, that you're going to have adversities in life, but whatever you do it to the best of your abilities, and don't let anyone tell you that you can't do something. She's going to tell you, you know, there's somebody out there that's always is waiting for you to fail, or waiting to prove you wrong. But no matter what, your beliefs, when you set out to do something, just do it to the best of your abilities, you know, no matter what people are going to say, because they're going to try to bring you down. And if you start listening to people and believing what they say, they will bring you down. And yeah. That was one thing I know that, and thinking back on, you know, her career, because she taught school for over 30 years, and the school system in the hometown that we were from, in the school, in that school system, she was the first African-American teacher in that school system. So she met adversity from the students who did not want to be in her classroom because, first of all, she was an African-American, you know. Then the parents of these students that did not want their children in, because it was 2 years. She actually started teaching in the school system 2 years after it had integrated. But she had adversity from the students, from the parents, some of the teachers, the principals. You know, they were there. Some of them were there just to wait to see that, you know, she's going to fail. You know, we're going to do what we can. I mean, she went through a lot. And she told me, a couple of stories about things that happened in the classroom. And I think they were trying to cause her to fail. But what they didn't know, and a lot of them didn't know and did not know until recently, that, you know, hey, this, you know, mama, you know, she was in the Army. So she had that tough skin and she did not have that I'm going to fail mentality. She, whatever they threw at her, she met that adversity. And in the long run, she won over. After a while, she had parents coming to her, thanking her for what she had done for her students, and that they had learned a lot by being in her classroom. And the students would finally come to her and say, hey, you know, thank you for everything that you've done for me, you know. So she met a lot of adversity, but she did not let things a lot of times did not go as planned for her. But she had to change course right in the middle of what she was doing, she did, and she made it work. And so I think she would just tell people, whatever your plans are, don't let people tell you that you cannot do something, because your only hold back is yourself.
And that's a great, great lesson to end on. Cynthia, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and sharing your family story. I am so grateful.
Thank you for having me again. Thank you so much. And I'm glad that we're getting the stories out there about the women and the 6888 in general. And the more stories that we can get out there, the more people are going to realize, hey, you know, this is history. This is what went on. And these were remarkable women.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Next Us 818 podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like us to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight I'll share a quote from basketball great Michael Jordan. Obstacles don't have to stop you. If you run into a wall, don't turn around and give up. Figure out how to climb it, go through it, or work around it. That is what Elizabeth Barker Johnson did throughout her entire life in pursuit of her education and career in the face of many adversities. So see you for our next show on Wednesday, October 19th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can catch the show on Anchor and Spotify.